Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 116. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in once again for David Todd, who I believe is out in California for Game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Sitting in for David Todd is Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Monday, and we actually have a few things to talk about today.
We do. You never know what's going to happen in the off season. Sometimes, you know, you think it's going to be a pretty slow weekend, as they have been. But, man, Saturday, it got a little crazy.
Yeah, before we get into that, the Steelers are resuming week three of their OTA sessions this week. And as expected, they are using Monday today as a team building exercise today. Normally they go, or I shouldn't say normally, I mean the last three or four years, I think, as far back as I can remember, they've always gone to the Dave and Buster's and played games and had their team building exercise there. It appears as though they went bowling today. So we'll see if they go to Dave and Buster's after that. But regardless, this isn't anything new. Teams are allowed 10 OTA practices under the CBA. The Steelers usually only take advantage of 9 of those. They will continue Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, wrap up week three, and then I believe they'll have a week off before reconvening in Pittsburgh for their mandatory mini camp. And then after that, they'll have another 3 to 4 weeks off before the start of training camp. So we're getting closer. Still not a whole lot of news coming out of from the team specifically related to OTA practices. It's probably not too surprising with all the media restrictions. However, comma, as I like to say, mm-hmm. and as Alex alluded to there at the top of the show, who knew that most of our news this weekend that would power the Terrible Podcast would come out of the annual men's fantasy camp that I know a few of our listeners go to. I think Victor is one of those who has been for the last several years. Victor Perry on Twitter, Porkchop333. You all should be following him. But why don't you kind of recap the things that a different Twitter user came across this weekend, Alex, and then we'll kind of discuss each one of them individually.
Yeah, the two major things, because there was one, and it's his name's Craig Scott. I'll get his Twitter handle. It's at CraigScott31. If you're interested in going back at his timeline, tweets, of course, are still up. You know, this is a guy that was at fantasy camp. He had taken a video of Carter Lake speaking highly of, you know, Tyler Medikevich, the nickname of Dirty Red. So we know that he was there and Lake was there talking. But the two big things that Lake said in terms of actual news was that, you know, we finally probably got an answer on Brandon Boykin and what his issue is. And according to Lake says that Boykin has a degenerative – oh, I said that horribly. But
easy for you to say.
He's got a long-term – hip problem where one leg is shorter than the other, and according to Scott via Lake, that it's caused him issues being able to run and with his gait and things like that. So that appears to be the issue with Brandon Boykin. There's a hip condition, and there's some truth to this. You know, if you don't necessarily trust this Craig Scott gentleman off the bat, because there was reports when Boykin visited Atlanta that he had a possible hip issue as the reason. The other thing that Lake said, and we'll get into each of these more in depth here, is that, you know, he kind of confirmed really the worst kept secret in Pittsburgh, that the Steelers were targeting William Jackson with the 25th pick. Of course, Jackson goes one pick ahead to Cincinnati, and the Steelers take Artie Burns. So Boykin has a hip problem, and the Steelers wanted William Jackson were the two big stories.
And people are probably curious, oh, Lord, here we go again, talking more about a player that's no longer in Pittsburgh, talking about Brandon Boykin. But, you know, until this season gets underway, there's going to be a small section of the fan base that still – reaches back to last year and wonder why Boykin didn't see the field earlier than what he wound up, wound up happening with him. Why a guy like Antoine Blake, still saw his share of action. Why the team didn't really seem to pursue re-signing Boykin during the offseason when come to find out he has signed a one-year contract with the Carolina Panthers for really veteran minimum value with only an $80,000 signing bonus. And then, fast forward ahead a couple weeks, and then he's cut loose by the Carolina Panthers out of nowhere. I know a lot of people, including myself, have been scratching their heads saying, I mean, this is a guy that I thought, man, Brandon Boykin's gonna, when he hits free agency, he's gonna get a contract to pay him, $5-6 million a season. And I think now we're into later stages now, knowing exactly what's going on with him, why he still doesn't have a home for the second time during the off season with him. And quite honestly, he might not ever play another down in the National Football League now.
Yeah, his market's really cold. I mean, I think he will get signed eventually. I mean, maybe in camp when someone gets hurt or right before camp as a flyer. But yeah, I wasn't crazy about talking about Boykin stuff before, and even during the season when he wasn't playing, it was a little difficult to try to come up with an explanation, and I wanted my focus on the guys that were playing. But now that we appear to have some pretty concrete information, and yes, this is coming from a Twitter user, but news can come in so many different ways. It's 2016. We're in the era of the internet. We know that Craig Scott was there. We know Carno Lake was there. We know Lake was talking to them. And to be so specific about a hip issue like that when there's already evidence, a couple weeks ago about a hip problem, you don't just make that up, I don't think. And some other factors kind of give him credibility. I reached out to him personally and talked to him. He had a couple other tweets talking about Brian McFadden and Keenan Lewis and some real kind of minute details that aren't that exciting. So if you're going to make something up, you're not going to talk about, Brian McFadden and Keenan Lewis and kind of, tiny stuff like that. So I personally believe it. I have no reason not to. But and this would give the explanation of why Boykin's path has taken the way it has.
Yeah, and I think, as I mentioned, Victor Perry, a longtime listener of the show, if it seems, judging by his timeline, he was there as well, too. There's no reason to not believe this Craig Scott fella. And on top of it, I think Victor Perry would have reached out to me and said, hey, that didn't exactly happen that way. Mm-hmm. There's no reason not to believe these guys. And like you said, non-traditional source, I guess you would call it. But in today's landscape, Twitter, social media, breaking news can come. Mm-hmm. This was huge breaking news, but news, regardless, can come from any really form or fashion. Nowadays, you have people at the scene of car accidents reporting firsthand information, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So there's no reason not to believe him. Now, should, I guess, I think some of the conversation in the post in the comment section kind of went this way. There's several other things we're going to get to that Lake said here, talking about William Jackson and all like that, but is this something that Carnell Lake should have discussed?
No, and I'm really surprised that he was that open. I mean, you can appreciate it because, we always talk about, with players or coaches, we wish they could be more honest and they wouldn't give you the old kind of tired cliches. But if I was in that role and I was in those shoes, I would never say that kind of stuff. I wouldn't give you anything good in an interview, especially talking about a player's medical history. So I'm really surprised that Lake said all that he did. I'm guessing he didn't realize that the word would get out like that. He's not a head coach. He doesn't really think about those things in terms of media impact and things like that. But, very surprised that Carnell Lake was so open.
I am, too. I'm glad he was.
Yeah.
It gives us something to talk about.
On a personal level, as someone who writes for news, I love it. But if I was Lake, I would not be doing it. No, this is a bad idea.
Absolutely, and I think it's easy probably for him to get because, to be quite honest, in interviews with the media, since he's been in Pittsburgh, Carnell Lake has not been very forthcoming. Really, you don't get a lot of information from Carnell Lake's interviews with the media. So I can envision him thinking, you know, oh, I'm just sitting around with a couple of buddies here, because that tends to be more the atmosphere, I'm sure, at these men's fantasy camps. Right. You know, you're probably the last thing that you're thinking is one of the guys there is going to run out to Twitter and report verbatim what you just said. I'm willing to bet that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I think that they're going to put Lake in a bunker somewhere until training camp.
Yeah, and people, I think, have brought up HIPAA and legalities, you know, related to this. It's not like Lake, you know, revealed his medical chart,
right,
you know, to these guys. I don't think he's broken any laws as far as privacy goes and you know, that kind of stuff. It's just not the kind of stuff that you hear coaches talk about former players and their injuries type of thing. You know, will he get chided from, you know, by head coach Mike Tomlin? Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised to find that out. But I don't think he did anything terribly wrong. It's just I don't think that the organization is pleased with him, you know, kind of revealing those kind of things. And, of course, one of those things that we will now talk about is him talking about William Jackson and how the Steelers were locked in on him and how the Bengals, you know, snaked him away the pick ahead. I don't think any of us are too surprised by that. I think the main thing that we're surprised about is that someone in the organization would actually come out and say such a thing.
Yeah, again, it was the worst-kept secret. We all know the Steelers really liked William Jackson. And although this is a story, because, you know, you don't often get that kind of confirmation from, you know, this early in the process, at least. If you ever hear about who a team wanted, it's usually years and years down the road whenever careers are finished up. So, you know, that's kind of the story here. But I don't think it's that. It doesn't really matter that much. We know that Jackson was going to be their guy if he was there, based on the way that the board had fallen at the time. And people were saying, is this bad for Artie Burns? Is this going to hurt him? Artie Burns is going to be fine. You know, I'm sure he's not going to take much offense to it. He knows that the Steelers like other players. He's just happy to be in Pittsburgh and to be the best player that he can be.
Well, the Steelers probably had several other players ranked higher than William Jackson, too.
Right.
And had one of those guys fallen, who's to say, you know, who's to say if Carl Joseph hadn't fallen,
yeah,
that, you know, that he wouldn't have been. There's always somebody probably, unless you have the number one pick, you know, there's always going to be somebody probably ranked higher than you. It's just rare that we get confirmation that this is the guy that we kind of had targeted and we didn't get him. And it also kind of – look, I like Artie Burns. I've watched a lot of his tape since he actually was selected. He has kind of grown on me a little bit. I still overall considered him kind of a round two, you know, talent, if you ask me. And to me now, this really reeks of Mr. Rooney or Art Rooney II told these guys to go out and get a cornerback this year in the first round, fix that secondary, and, you know, if you have to take a second round player in a first to do that, you do that. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is it gets away from, you know, we hear Kevin Colbert for years talk about, oh, we draft players we want, not players of need. This was a need pick, if there ever was one, for the Steelers this year. And, you know, it does appear that they kind of settled for Artie Burns. And, you know, there, in my opinion, there were a couple other better options on the board. Maybe not same position, obviously, but you know, I think we're starting to see the full scope of the direction that this team took during the draft and it was directed above guys like Colbert.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there was some influence there, but I really honestly believe, and maybe I have the black and gold color glasses on, but I really believe they thought Artie Burns was worth the value there, and that he was a first-round pick and a guy that they really, really like. You know, it's still always about need, no matter, you know, people talk about BPA, but there's really no one that goes straight, strict best player available without looking at need in any way. I think it was Brian Billick, who had quipped a while back, I forget the context of it, but he said, you know, we always took the best player available, but it always filled the needs. Kind of joked about that. So you find a way to try to marry the two. So I don't believe it was a panic move. I don't believe it was a reach in their minds, even though my personal assessment, you know, and your personal assessment might be a little bit different. I just think that, you know, they wanted William Jackson, but I think they're still very happy with Artie Burns.
Now, of course, it's subjective in you know, our thinking as far as it relates to Artie Burns. But then again, you look at guys like, you know, I think we both agree Kenny Clark wouldn't have been a good fit, right?
Yeah, I don't think he did enough as a pass rusher to be that three-down kind of guy.
And he was taken two selections after the Steelers took Artie Burns. Paxton Lynch, you know, face it, the team wasn't going to go quarterback in round one. It would have been interesting, you know, going back to all that discussion about should the Steelers have traded out, you know, could they have possibly traded out or down a few spots and still got Artie Burns? It's hard to say because, you know, you keep going back to as soon as the Steelers took Artie Burns, the Kansas City Chiefs seemed to bail real quick too,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they traded out of the 28th overall pick with the San Francisco 49ers. Would I have minded the Steelers drafting Joshua Garnett with the 25th overall pick? No, not at all. But we talked about Lynch. We talked about Clark. Neither one of those two guys are going to be the pick. The Steelers re-signing Ramon Foster, you know, several weeks prior to the draft already gave you the feeling that this team wasn't going to be interested in a interior lineman in the first round. Obviously, Robert Kimdichie, you know, too many red flags with him. He went 29th overall to the Arizona Cardinals. Vernon Butler, a guy that you kind of like, mm-hmm. I think, went 30th overall to the Panthers. So you can maybe theoretically see that as possibly being an option. I don't think either of us were high on the tackle out of Texas A&M, German Ifedi.
Mm-hmm.
I know I was. I don't think you were as well, too, especially not in the first round. The Seahawks got him 31st overall. Emmanuel Ogba, I could probably have lived with that, but would we be talking about that being a reach at 25th overall? I think there's a possibility of that. Kevin Dodd, 33rd, you know, we're in the second round now.
Yeah.
You know, we could go on and on here. So maybe, you know, when you look at where that axis of need crosses best player available, you can make the argument that intersection was right at William Jackson and Artie Burns for the Steelers, and they didn't get William Jackson, but they got the next best, you know, one down the list in Artie Burns.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. You said it well, the axis of talent versus need, and where do they intersect? It's all about, you know, player development now. All these guys in the draft, they have talent. It's about how well do you develop that, and we know Burns is a raw guy that, you know, in some ways he kind of fits the scheme, but in some ways he doesn't. You know, there's so much that's going to be on Carno Lake's plate right now to help him develop that technique because he's a really raw guy. So the two biggest guys, I think, to Artie Burns this year is Carno Lake, who's the obvious one. But I've also said, you know, Garrett Beaumont, the strength and conditioning coach, of getting him on a good program to get stronger because, you know, Burns is still pretty lanky right now and does not have a ton of functional strength. So I think he plays with some tenacity and some physicality, but he has to get stronger. It affects everything that he does, his ability as a tackler, his ability to jam at the line, you know, ability to play catch points down the field and run down the field with some of these receivers. He needs to get stronger, to be better in all those phases, some of the areas that could be, you know, looked at as the strengths of his game. So, you know, development is so key. You can draft these guys, but if you can't develop them correctly, you'll never get your investment back.
of, you know, I like to do that post-draft exercise every year where I have people, you know, go through until the Steelers, you know, basically you get to select from the list of players, take in either the player that the Steelers actually selected or the long list of players prior to their next selection, you know, and use that as a round-by-round exercise. And I think we got some pretty interesting choices this past year when we did it a few weeks ago, Alex. The thing is, how many other different – we already covered a long list of there. How many different players other than Artie Burns are you going to select – or would you have been comfortable selecting there? Josh Garnett, I think – I don't think that would have hurt your feelings there.
I mean –
Who else? Noah Spence? I mean –
Yeah, literally the three I would have said, and I don't even think about this. First of all, I've thought about this since basically a couple of days after the draft. But the three I guess I would have taken there would have been I'll try to rank them. I would have said – Vernon Butler, number one, Noah Spence, number two, and Josh Garnett, number three.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you're a bigger fan of Chris Jones than I was. In fact, I know you were. But, I mean, there's no way either one of us, I think, would have taken Chris Jones in that spot. I was a big Sterling Shepard fan as well, too. I think he's going to be a great fit in the league and a good fit with the Giants. But there's no way you're going to take a guy like Sterling Shepard in the first round. So, you know, I guess what I'm in some sort of way I'm going back and I'm defending the selection of Artie Burns, and I just think overall it's just weird to hear Carnell Lake come out and say what he did about it, but in the grand scheme of things it's not huge earth-shattering breaking news here.
Right, and if that's the thing that sticks with Artie Burns and he falls apart because of that news, then he was never meant to succeed in this league anyway. I'm sure it's going to have no effect on him. Probably doesn't even hear about this story, but $100, he does not even know that this story exists.
Quite possibly. It doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things anyway. Anything else? Maybe the most pertinent piece of news to come out of what Carnell Lake had to say was kind of this this praise for Medicavich.
I mean, we know the nickname for him now, Dirty Red. What do you think of that? Good nickname.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And I wrote a little bit about Tyler late Sunday there. When you go back and look at that long list of award winners of players who had won,
the Benarik and what's the other one? Yeah, the two major, you know, defensive player of the year, linebacker of the year awards.
And someone in the comments there decided to go ahead and post the Heisman winners over the years. And look, winning a college football award in the grand scheme means absolutely nothing, and I get that. But when you go back and you look at the long list of past winners of the Benarik and the Bronco Nagurski was the other one that couldn't come to mind. The Bronco Nagurski Award. There's some pretty big names on this list. You know, especially when you look at the Benarik Award, in Dominica Sue, Patrick Peterson, Tyrann Mathieu, Manti Te'o. Well, Manti Te'o hasn't really exploded into, you know, a premier player. He's still around. Aaron Donald, of course, with the Rams. Coming out of the University of Pittsburgh, and you look at the list of specifically the list of linebackers on this list on both the Benarik and the Bronco Nagurski past award winners. There's some prominent people in here, so I mean he really is in some good company. But then you fast forward and you say, why did a guy like him and the 2014 winner of both awards, Scooby Wright, wind up only being drafted in the seventh round this year? Well, measurables definitely have a lot to do with it, and I think Medicavich addressed that nicely during the combine when he said there's nothing that he can do about his size. It's the film. He thinks that he put enough film, on tape for the past 4 years for them to see that his size doesn't matter. He understands that he's not the biggest, the strongest, the fastest, but he'll beat you in the film room, and that's the thing that he's definitely going to have to do at the NFL level, because when you look at his film, we've already talked about this, you know, quite a bit since he was drafted, and since we've both gone back and looked at his film. you know, he's not going to kill you with athleticism. I mean, he's not a guy that even if he makes this team is likely to stay on the field in third down situations. However, he is a guy that can be a two down, a linebacker in this league, especially if he knows what the other team's doing before they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people know the kind of guy that you're getting with Matakevich, and I guess there's some sort of comfort in that, especially for a seventh-round pick. You know, my personal thought is that he's never going to be a guy that's going to make an impact on defense. I know he's going to disagree with that, and as he should, but I don't believe really the two-down linebacker can function in today's NFL. I think he's going to be a guy that has a chance to be a core four-phase special teamer, the way we've seen so many linebackers in Pittsburgh, whether it's Terrence Garvin, you go back to Patrick Bailey or Clint Creedwalt, have done before. I think that's where his ceiling's at. I think he can do that role, but I also know coming into this year at least, his competition is going to be pretty fierce.
If you leave him on the field and single him and try, against 11 personnel, you're not going to get him to run with anybody.
Right.
Now, you can get him to obviously do zone drops, or you could probably try to blitz him, instead and have your other linebacker, inside linebacker, try to handle coverage responsibility. There's limit. His tape is limited athletically in the story, and he knows that.
Yeah.
Now, if all he ever develops into is a four core special teams player, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that as a seventh-round draft pick, and especially if he's a good one in that area. You know, straight line, get downfield, make a tackle kind of guy. With all that said, he's a guy you want to root for without a doubt. I mean, to hear him talk and everything, and obviously him being a late-round draft pick, you're rooting for the guy. I'm still going to be surprised if he makes his 53.
Well, I think it's a possibility. I mean, he has to beat out, Anthony Ciccolo and Travis Feeney. I don't think that's impossible. And really, he only has to beat out, I think, one of those guys, because I think they're going to keep 10. And you're looking at the last couple spots, 9, 10, 11 are going to be Ciccolo, Feeney, and Matakevich. You can throw in L.J. Ford. You can throw in, Zumwalt outside looking in. But I think it's possible. It wouldn't surprise me, but we'll see how it goes, in camp in the preseason. Because, again, special teams guys in camp and the actual practices, it's really tough to gauge. I mean, you want to see how they take coaching and how they take instruction, sure. But, it's tough to get a feel because you don't get that, special teams. You don't get to replicate that the way that you do offense, defense compared to a game.
What did you think about the other little tidbit or two that Lake threw out there that neither of us have really written about?
Which one is this one?
The Lewis McFadden.
I barely even I just glazed over it. What was it talking about that LeBeau wouldn't play Keenan Lewis and he kept McFadden out there until McFadden got burned? Is that the story?
Yeah, and it's hard to say what. Was he talking about burned in that? What was it? The season opener against. Baltimore, was it?
You have a better memory than I do about that stuff. But, yeah, it was the first week, I think, of the year, whatever. I remember the year it was that McFadden got burned and then he got replaced. It just kind of goes back to LeBeau being a little hesitant of playing rookies, a little bit too structured. We've seen that, 2 years ago with Stephon Tuitt, him struggling to get so much playing time, even though Cam Thomas was a clear liability. Players have talked about that. It's a more simplistic, it's a little bit more player-friendly defense under Keith Butler. You're playing faster, you're playing to your strengths, you're getting onto the field quicker, you're more confident. Butler said that specifically in an interview with Missy Matthews. So, just another evidence of Dick LeBeau, as much as we do love him, some of the faults that he had.
Ramon Foster's always good for a couple of sound bites whenever people get him on the radio, and he had an interview Friday with NFL No Huddle. I've never heard of that before, but I came across the show. Evidently, the host normally has, I think, Cordell Stewart on as a co-host, but sitting in for Cordell Stewart the other day was Willie Colon, who also is another one to good for some good sound bites at times. And they had Ramon Foster on, And, you know, talking about the whole rivalry thing between the Steelers and the Bengals and the Ravens, while that was fun to write about you know, a couple of comments that Ramon made in there, I thought the most intriguing piece of information that Ramon delivered was him basically saying that Mike Tomlin has set a goal for this offensive line this year to establish 5.0 yards per rush. And you know, that's a lofty goal. In so many words, Ramon Foster agrees. He said that's a tall task to carry, but it's something to shoot for, something we're going to take pride in, especially with the backs that we have with Le'Veon Bell and D'Angelo Williams in the backfield. When you go back to last season, though, the Steelers managed to average 4.4 yards per rush. They did so without having Pouncey for the entire season, and they also didn't have Le'Veon Bell for you know, over half the season there. And prior to Le'Veon Bell going down, he averaged 4.9 yards per rush. So is enough? Does this offensive line get enough credit right now? I know we kind of hit on that the other day, but I mean, this offensive line could quite arguably be the best in the league. And if that's the case, there's no reason to think that they can't really push, you know, make a hard run at this 5.0 yards per rush average in 2016.
Well, I don't know about national circles. I think people in Pittsburgh know how good this line is, or at least how good this line can be, especially if, you know, Villanueva takes the jump that we think he can. He's kind of the wild card, if you had to pick one of the four. I don't think they're going to hit, you know, 5 yards per carry, and that's a really easy statement, I guess, to say. It's only, I think you point out, it's only been done once in Steelers history, back with, you know, what year is that, 72 or something, Franco?
72,
yeah.
Yeah,
Franco's
72.
Rookie year. You know, but, you know, what the old saying is, if you hit your goals, you didn't set them high enough to begin with. So, you know, you'll like a coach to come in with that really lofty goal to try to keep these guys motivated. So I don't think they're going to hit five. You know, that's the goal. That's the point of the coach, is to set those real lofty goals for his players to try to really work towards.
Yeah, they hit 4.75. Certainly would be a great accomplishment if you ask me. And you're going to win a lot of ball games, I think. If you run the ball 3 yards, 3 yards every time that you run it, you'll never have to punt, right?
yeah, but we don't want the 3 yards. That's the old Fran Rogel, hey, diddle, diddle, Rogel up the middle for three, and we're a little bit more explosive than that.
Absolutely, but, however, you know, being able to run the football at times when the opposition knows that you're going to run it and be able to run it successful is key, and we saw this offense do that, you know, several times over the course of the last several years. You go back to that game against Cincinnati a couple of years ago when they, you know, everybody knew the Georgia Power was coming in that game and they couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
And when it makes you that much more explosive as an offense when you can run the football at will.
I mean, it literally won them a game last year against San Diego on Bell's, you know, game-winning touchdown. I mean, that's literally the difference between a win and a loss.
Absolutely, absolutely. You reading anything into the comments Ross Cockrell, made about bulking up during the offseason?
Not really. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. Again, he hadn't had the whole year to go through the Steelers' kind of, you know, strengths and program. I mean, he did it in Buffalo, but you want to do it with the team that you're working for and to match up, you know, your program versus what the team looks for and what the team wants. So, still a young guy. We knew he had to get bigger. I had written about that last week in kind of my one thing to look for. Cockle's got to be more physical, got to be a little bit bigger kind of guy. I mean, William Gay is not a huge guy, but he's got some muscle to him. And he, you know, he's a great tackler, and he's a great, you know, edge defender and supports the run really, really well. So that's the guy you kind of want to mold things after if you're Ross Cockrell. So it's a requirement. I think that's really the biggest thing he's got to do, especially, again, Dave, now that if he starts this year, he's going to be playing base corner, you know, a lot more often. It wasn't him last year. It was Antoine Blake. So you're going to have to be a lot more active against the run. You can't be kind of, you know, put out on an island in nickel and not have to worry about run support nearly as much.
I would agree. I'd like to see him get more physical, and that's been the knock on him. I mean, he's a smart player. He's probably one of the I think he's got an underrated football IQ, and I think that's kind of what attracted the Steelers to him a couple of years ago when he was coming out of Duke there as well, too. Is just football IQ can make up a lot of times for some physical inabilities or inequalities, if you will. What else is out there that we need to mop up with?
Let's see. What do we have? Isaac Redman has a coaching job with the Cardinals. There's a shocker. I mean, so many guys are out there in Arizona now. It's kind of almost funny at this point. I did an article today on some of the worst decisions ever in Steelers history. I did have one reader, Wes, did have a good point about Rod Woodson being let go in free agency. That probably should have been on the list, so that's my mistake. But I'll ask you, Dave, what do you think? Any idea of what some of the worst decisions, not draft pick wise, but just anything else the Steelers have ever made in history?
That definitely not letting Rod Woodson get away was one of those. Mm-hmm. The whole signing of Sean Mahan several years ago, mm-hmm. Which you already hit on. Boy, you could, it's easy to put passing up Dan Marino on there. And I know you caught a little bit of flack when you did the draft bust a week or two ago by putting Gabe Rivera up there. It's hard to imagine. We don't know what if not for that unfortunate accident, what kind of player would Gabe Rivera have become? Mm-hmm. But with that said, as good as Dan Marino wound up being, granted. Never getting the ultimate prize. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe that he at least wouldn't have played in the big game a couple of times had he been drafted by the Steelers.
Yeah, I feel like you could almost count on that with Chuck Knoll. I mean, those Steelers teams in the 80s, they certainly had their bad years, but, they had a couple decent years, especially in the earlier 80s. They went to an AFC title game, I think. What was that, in 84? I believe so. I think there was enough there to put them over the top, or at least make them a whole lot more competitive than they were. And so, yeah, I mean, to the whole, Rivera thing, I understand he was not a bust in the way that, Jermaine Stephens and Tim Worley and whoever you want to put in there was. It's a totally different situation. But, the bottom line is that it's someone who just did not come close to your expectations. And while it's very unfortunate and tragic for Rivera to have that car accident that left him paralyzed from the chest down for the rest of his life, he drove drunk, and he put himself at risk. He put other people at risk. It was, and it sounds very harsh, and I don't mean to come off this harsh, but it was his own fault and his own undoing. And so, you look at it in a different light. You realize it wasn't because of a lack of work ethic or maybe a lack of talent, but you didn't reach expectations all the same. So that's why I put him as a bust on there. And even if he had played whole career, he would have not come close to what Dan Marino did.
Where do you think some fans would put not re-signing Keenan Lewis on this list?
Probably higher than it should be. I mean, it's unfortunate, but sometimes players are going to go, especially in this really kind of today's modern era of free agency where guys, come and go so much. I don't think that Keenan Lewis, honestly, we would have liked him back, but I don't think he would have been some sort of supreme difference maker, even if he had been re-signed.
I'm trying to think of another player. Can you think of any others that they in since you've been alive?
Which is basically since the start of free agency. So I am a free agency era child. The Steelers have done a really good job in free agency. There's not been any major whiffs. I mean, there's been a couple. Sean Mahan's probably your biggest one in terms of money, 5 years, $17 million deal, but they were able to trade him away back to Tampa Bay. In terms of, the guys that they've let go, it has not been too many names.
Over the course, prior to this offseason, normally when the Steelers decide not to re-sign a player, at most maybe one or two wind up elsewhere, with other teams, and very rarely do any of those players make an impact. And quite honestly, for all the after praise that Keenan Lewis gets, he hasn't been overly good, if you ask me.
He hasn't been healthy. He's got major hip problems, I think.
Right, and didn't he have that knee issue or something? But remember those pictures on the internet of him, what was it, dislocated something or another, just grotesque, you can always say, well, had he not played there, maybe he doesn't get – you can always revise history to fit your narrative, I guess, and all like that. But for what they paid him, they wound up basically paying Cortez, yada, yada. Would it have made a difference over the course of the last you know, couple, 3 years, who knows?
Yeah.
They took a chance on Cortez. They missed there. And to my knowledge, Cortez still hasn't surfaced anywhere, right?
Not a peep out of him, not a tryout, not a look. I mean, he might have to be getting healthy right now. Could be the issue. Who knows? I mean, that guy's got some serious health concerns, of course.
That makes you – that the fact that he hasn't resurfaced anywhere leads you to believe that there's more – medical-related stuff to him, right?
Well, we all know there's a long-term thing. I mean, he's not a guy that's going to be playing 7 years from now. I mean, he's going to get a couple more years at best out of those knees because he's got a pretty chronic knee problem. I don't know what the heck the exact specifics are, but we know there's something there. And so I'm sure, you know, any team that's going to take a chance on him is going to be pretty desperate to do so, and it's going to be a real short-term, no-guarantee kind of thing because, you know, it really seems like Cortez Allen, his body just does not have much left to give to the game.
And I mean, well, I guess what I'm getting at is, if I thought for sure had he been healthy, that he would have been given one more opportunity to compete this offseason.
Yeah, me too. I mean, why not? There was little risk to it. You put the investment in. The guy still clearly had the talent. Whenever you sign him to that long term deal, if he was healthy, I'm sure they would have given it one last chance.
And the fact that he hasn't signed with a team yet, I mean, let's face it, his market value is minimum plus an $80,000 signing bonus at most. That's his market value, even if he was healthy right now. So the fact that he hasn't signed yet leads you to believe that, man, there's really is something going on with that knee. And like much like Brandon Boykin, he might not ever play again. And then it becomes the thing is, did they mess up by giving him a contract, you know, because of his play, or was it just one of those things that you miss sometimes with these guys that just can't get healthy? And Lord knows there was some writing on the wall with his health prior to him signing that deal that he got a few off seasons
ago. Yeah, it really just depends on what they knew about the medical and the comfort level, because, I mean, it was hard to argue with some of the plays he was making. I know some people will probably try, but it's just, you know, it was the medical that I think really doomed him. But my favorite, though, for that worst decisions, though, is just looking back at the early day Steelers, and you know me, Dave, I love the pre-Noll teams. They're my favorite ones to look at, and this is a Pittsburgh team that had Johnny Unitas, that drafted Len Dawson, and neither of them did a thing in Pittsburgh. It's just comical to think about how Pittsburgh had two of the greatest quarterbacks of that era. United is still regarded as one of the best quarterbacks ever, and they got rid of both. It's funny.
I think Sigmund Bloom, our buddy from Football Guys, said perhaps that list needs to include Bruce Arians quote-unquote retiring.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, Arians is I love Bruce Arians. I mean,
I caught the most hell. I think he's a brilliant offensive mind, and you know, I think in today's NFL you have to be aggressive and go down the field, and I think he was at the forefront of that.
But
you know,
I also
all those close to plays, you know.
I also think, though, maybe Todd Haley might be the best thing ever for Ben Roethlisberger, to be honest with you, the way he's helped kind of evolve Ben's game and get him to play a little bit more from the pocket and be a smarter quarterback. I know there's a lot of factors that go into this, but I think Haley's a big reason why Ben's sack percentage has gone down the way it has for the last several seasons.
And, of course, it doesn't help spending those draft picks that they've spent on offensive linemen,
right.
But with that said, we have seen Roethlisberger get the football out. Look, you're not going to change the beast completely anyway, because we see the explosive plays. Just go back and look at the explosive plays that Marcus Wheaton had last year and just isolate in on those. How many of those are a result of Roethlisberger extending the play? I mean, if you go back realistically and look at however many, what was it, 47? 50, I can't remember how many explosive plays last year they had through the air. If you go back and look at them, you know, how many of those were by design?
Mm-hmm.
Not too many. Not many. Not many. Most of them were probably deep balls inside the opponent's 40-yard line that were completed, you know, by design kind of plays, you know. but would probably be most of.
Yeah, I think Haley gets kind of a bit of a bad rap though, because although he is not really the four vertical attack that Arians has, people call, you know, Haley's offense a horizontal one. It still has plenty of deep shots and a lot of vertical stretches and some levels concepts where you're getting some vertical concepts with some underneath ones to give yourself different options. So I think Haley still goes vertical, you know, plenty for my liking, and we've still seen some of those big plays out of it.
Sure, absolutely, and you know, I think because of having a guy like Le'Veon Bell back, that gives you another explosive element, you mm-hmm. know, with this offense as well too, and sometimes you just rather see your quarterback, you know, take the easy out and check the football down instead of forcing the football down the field. Sure, we know how important explosive plays are, the relevance on winning football. You know, there's no track stat that I love tracking more than the top stat. You know, talking about the differential between explosive plays and turnovers and, you know, everything related to that. They make a huge difference, but you can still get those. You can still get an explosive 20-yard play by throwing a one-yard pass to your running back.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. I mean, you can have a four-vertical or a vertical attack, and even if that's taken away by the defense, it's going to expand the linebackers, it's going to expand the secondary. So now you can hit your check down to the back. Now you have your back one-on-one with a linebacker in space. I mean, if you have Le'Veon Bell, he's going to make that guy miss 75% of the time, and you're getting yourself a big chunk play from a simple check down. So schemes can open up, you know, a vertical attack, even if the vertical attack is taken away.
All right. I think we've, you know, thank goodness for having a few Carnell Lake things to talk about this week. We filled up a good section of time here on this Monday. So we're kind of going to leave it there until Friday. Name me one player you would like Steelers.com to interview this week.
Ooh, to interview. This was in your Friday questions, too. You always have the good Friday questions.
I got one on the tip of my tongue.
All right, I'm going to say, and just think off the top of my head, I'm going to say Villanueva. I'd like to hear how his offseason went.
I want to hear from Duran Grant. This is a guy that all of a sudden nobody talks to anymore.
So. Yeah, I assume he's still a corner. You have to think somebody would have talked about him going to safety had he made a switch.
Yeah, and I don't think that's happened. But I just like to hear where he's at in his development now. You know,
sure.
And that's just one player from last year that seemingly has fallen off off the earth. You know, Chicklow's another one I kind of like to hear from as well.
I was just going to say real quick. I mean, Grant's going to be big for special teams this year. They got a lot of corners they got to replace in special teams, whether it was, you know, Blake or Boykin, guys running down kicks and punts. Someone's got to do it, and that's got to be Grant's role this year. So, you know, he's kind of a – in a sense, an underrated guy, because he's got to make an impact on special teams.
Maybe we'll get a gift in here from a couple of guys this week from the media or from Steelers.com. Give us some different angles to write about there. Alex, once again, thanks for sitting in for David Todd. Let's see. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex on Twitter at Alex underscore Kazora. You can follow David Todd at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, please go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll see the donate button. In upper right in the navigational bar. Another week or two, we're going to start our annual fundraising campaign to send Alex to training camp. If you follow the site and his reports over the last couple of years, you know how beneficial that is and what a good job he does on a year-in, year-out basis as far as that goes. So please save you some quarters underneath your seat cushions of your couch to throw that direction as well, too. Until Friday, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.